everyone, it's me, Sin Munoz. Welcome to Low Key Unhinged Podcast, a personal guide to all things pop culture. I'm catching up with you every week on our favorite shows and hot takes with some of our favorite unhinged people. Tune in every week wherever you stream your podcast and follow Low Key Unhinged on all social platforms. See you next time. Ciao. Hey everyone, welcome back to Low Key Unhinged. It's me, Sin. We're episode 5 of Happily Ever After. Let's jump in. So this episode starts off with Darcy and Georgie. They have finally arrived in Bulgaria. Now, Georgie is ecstatic. He has mentioned he hasn't been back home in about 13 years. This is the first time that he's bringing Darcy. So the first time his family will be meeting her. They're so excited. And of course, true to Darcy's standards, they have arrived with 15 suitcases. And not just 15 suitcases, 15 suitcases that are luxury bags, including Louis Vuitton. So who travels like that? Don't really know, but Darcy needed them, apparently. She's fully decked out per usual in her fur coat. Okay, it's cute. It's a vibe. She's sweating. She's hot. She can't handle it. So she's adorable. I know she's a mess. We all know Darcy's a mess, but she is so cute. She's so funny. She really brings comedy to the episode, and she's just ecstatic to be there. She's so excited. Georgie wants to kick things off. He's going to be taking her to this very cute town that's known to be very romantic and nostalgic to him. It's a very old city. He mentions the history is one of the oldest cities in the world. So that was really cool. I didn't know that. But it's cute. The town is very cute. Kind of that cobblestone pavement. So very adorable. He brings her there. He wants to make it very special. He speaks with the host and says, hey, I would love to get the honeymoon suite. We're essentially newlyweds and I want to make it a very special night. I would like to think something got lost in translation, but the host is very awkward and hesitant to say, hey, sorry, it's under construction. The last couple essentially tore it up. So creepy, weird, strange. So they don't get the honeymoon suite, but no big deal. They go get a regular room. And of course, Darcy wants to make sure that nobody can hear them if they want to be romantic together. And so in doing so, she demands that Georgie steps outside, go ahead, hear for any sounds, very unnecessarily, kicks her boots up on the bed, starts squealing, hawking, whatever you want to call it. I think Georgie said she sounded like a horse, a dog, I'm not really sure. So she's making all these crazy sounds that are just unreasonable, but that's just Darcy, right? So he comes back in, reassures her that everything's in the clear. They're good to go. So they have their little romantic night. Okay, great. Great first night for them. Later on, they go ahead and show that they're having this really sweet dinner. So Georgie sets this up, makes it a very special night. Very cute town, very nostalgic to him. So he takes her to dinner. They're sitting at the table and they start kind of getting into it, and it's so sad because they were having such a good time, but in such a Georgie and Darcy fashion, I feel like there's some type of misunderstanding, and Georgie says things in not a great way, and he lets her know that essentially his parents might have different expectations than the reality of who Darcy is, and it's not really going to align with Darcy. It was brutal. It was harsh. I really feel like this is the perfect example of what I was talking about in the last few episodes where Georgie really just, he says things in a very harsh way. And I don't think it's intended to be the message that Darcy hears, but I think that he doesn't know how to say it any other way. And with that said, he ends up hurting her feelings, which is sad and terrible. And you really see Darcy, I don't even want to say spiraling. She's more so sad and hurt and kind of just contemplating, like, what is this going to look like? How's this going to go? Apparently, I'm a disappointment to his family. And she makes the comment. She says, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. I'm not going to say anything. Apparently, it's better for me not to talk. And it was just sad. And I felt bad for Darcy. She's such a bright light. She's so funny and silly most of the time. So to see her kind of go into this place of sadness and hurt and pain, it was a bit sad. So what can you do? Kind of what their storyline has been this whole time. Next, they lead up to Tiger Lily and Adnan, and we see Tiger Lily killing flies, genuinely getting rid of the insects in the house. I could not believe it. I was so surprised to see her in this role. If you go on Reddit, you'll see there's a lot of information about her ex-husband being allegedly a billionaire. And I just really didn't think I would ever see Tiger Lily in a cabin full of boxes killing bugs. Didn't see that for her. Not on the bingo card, but that's where they end up. So later on in the scene, we see that Tiger Lily is going to be introducing Adnan to her stepmom and her dad. And she's really excited. And she feels like Adnan needs to get his boots strapped on because it might not go as well as he imagines it's going to go. You know, her dad might be kind of harsh, have, you know, some strong words, or just be brutally honest. And so she kind of tries to prepare Adnan for this, but he seems pretty unfazed by it. Well, we meet them, and essentially they're really nice, down-to-earth people. I was kind of surprised by that, too. You just see Tiger Lily as this, like, over-the-top, fancy, bougie person. You kind of assume she comes from that background, but no, they were just down-to-earth, kind Christians, and they made sure that they did bring up, of course, the religion. So they start explaining their perspective and that they really don't think that Tiger Lily needs to change her religion for Adnan and his beliefs. And Adnan was very obnoxious. And I think that her father was giving him the platform to discuss his feelings and to discuss his religion and his faith, but not at the cost for Adnan to just start throwing jabs and explaining how the Quran is kind of the end all be all of all biblical scriptures. And that there's so many different versions of the Bible and kind of just really putting down the Bible. And it was just a really bad mood, but not really shocked because Adnan is just such a child. He's so immature, doesn't know how to handle these types of conversations, doesn't know how to show respect to other people's religions and their beliefs. Now, although Tiger Lily's family are Christian, and it's very clear that they would like for her to stay the religion that she chooses to stay, they seemed very open-minded. And I was very surprised by that, how open-minded that they truly were to Adnan being of a different faith, but they were. And I think Adnan really just crashed and burned in this conversation. He really was not respectful. He really was not showing any kind of courtesy or space. And I thought it was really funny because as the conversation continued on and you see Adnan just really digging himself into a hole, you really see her dad kind of question what he actually knows about the Bible, what he actually knows about the Quran. And so as Adnan is putting down the Bible, her dad and her stepmom kind of start schooling him on information about the Bible, why it was rewritten. And it was for people to have kind of more of a clear understanding, easier to read it and understand what they're talking about, and that it was a very confusing format before. And so they ask where the Quran came from, who wrote the Quran. And this is where Adnan really starts to play dumb. He really is trying to use his language as a barrier, that he's just not understanding what they're asking him. But we all know he very well did understand it. He just was playing stupid because he didn't have the answer. And it was kind of a funny moment because it just really showed that Adnan has no clue why he's so gung-ho about his religion and why he's trying to force Tiger Lily into it so strongly when he himself doesn't have all the information lined up with his own faith. So that was pretty funny. They start talking about the restrictions that Adnan has on Tiger Lily. And some of those restrictions are that she needs to hide her body, that she needs to not show skin, and that she essentially has to be very covered up. In this conversation, her dad again zings him and says, well, if Tiger Lily needs to hide her body so much because it makes you uncomfortable, it sounds more like you are not a very confident person, because a confident man is going to be okay with another man or person, whoever it is, looking at their wife, regardless of what they're wearing, and not take offense to that. Now, Adnan really didn't have much to say, and I was really glad that Tiger Lily's dad did step up and make that comment, because it's just, he's taken things like so far. So that's kind of the end of their portion of the episode. It leads us to Brandon and Julia. So we see Brandon and Julia meet with their friends at the beach. Really cool scene. I'm so glad that they did move out of Brandon's parents' house, not only so that they have their privacy, but they look to be in like a more fun area, somewhere where it's more suitable for people their age, where they can make friends and hang out at the beach and go out more. It's just not as rural seeming. So really happy for them. So they meet with their friends. They're all hanging out. Of course, one of their friends has a baby, and Brandon's playing with the baby, and it's very cute. You see how endearing he is. He's a little bit whiny on the episode, but nonetheless, he's just making sure Julia knows how ready he is for a baby and that he really knows what he's doing. And Julia starts to soften up a little bit. She starts to kind of see his passion for this, his desire to be a father. And as scared as she is, she wants to give Brandon that opportunity. She wants to allow him to at least try to have a child of his own. And so Brandon's playing with the baby. He's doing a good job. He's pretty good at it. It's not anything so mind-blowing, but he's playing with the baby, so it's fine. We see Julia kind of break down during this episode on the beach. She's starting to get emotional over the whole thing, and she starts to cry, which is just so sad because it seems like every time this gets brought up, she does start to cry over it. And so they move on. Later, towards the end of the episode, we see that they finally go to the appointment. Julia has agreed. She's getting the second opinion, and Brandon's so happy, and she's so scared. She just keeps saying over and over how much anxiety she has, how overwhelmed she feels, and Brandon's just reassuring her that no matter what, he's going to support her, he's going to be there for her, and that she essentially has nothing to worry about, which was really sweet. I'm glad that Brandon was being very supportive to her. And they go in, and she's scared, and she's seeing these probes, and she's asking why the women have to have it so difficult. And yes, that is the golden question we all have. Why is everything so hard on the women and so easy for the men? But that's just what it is. So they start the process. They do the ultrasound. The doctor, or I think it was a nurse practitioner, the provider anyways, she wraps it up and she starts going over the results. Julia's also done some blood work. It's going to take a few weeks before those results come back, but the imaging was then and there, and so she's able to interpret what she was able to see, and it wasn't great news. She sees what's likely a polyp. She sees a few things that can be a little bit challenging or could cause an issue for the embryo to attach, and it was sad, and I really wasn't actually expecting that. I thought, wow, okay, Julia's sharing this with the world, so, you know, it must have been good news, better than she was expecting, but it kind of just confirmed everything she was scared of. It really showed that there are some roadblocks ahead, and it wasn't that she can't get pregnant, it was that they're going to need to take some steps and possibly some procedures and do a few things ahead of time in order to try and see if they are able to eventually conceive a healthy child. And so that was really sad. I really did feel so bad for Julia. Brandon really seemed like he was trying to have a brave face, and that was really nice of him. But I mean, my heart kind of dropped, so you can kind of see their hearts dropped. It was really sad. It was kind of one of the sadder moments, I think, in 90 Day. But I thought that was really brave with Julia to share that with everybody, for everyone to see fertility, infertility. It's a very big conversation, a very big factor in a lot of women and men's lives. And I think it's important to touch on that. And they were brave enough to share that with everybody. So that was really nice of them. Next, we go on to Yara and Jovi. So Jovi's arriving home. Yara's picking him up from the airport. And she has a surprise. And I knew immediately what the surprise was. She has her nice big bag. Turns around and she surprised Jovi with a puppy. And Jovi's like, okay, a puppy, great. And puppy's cute, of course, so cute. And Myla, now I get them confused, Myla was excited. And they've apparently named the puppy Mila. So Mila and Myla. And Jovi is just so confused as to why that would be the name. It's very confusing. Yara explains that it was Myla who picked it. I think we could have picked a different name, a better name. So it is very confusing. Don't get mad at me if I say Mila, Myla when I'm talking about Myla. It's very, we could have named the dog anything. So anyways, it made more sense for her to get the dog. I was thinking when she had announced that she started her luxury line for puppy gear that it didn't really make sense that they didn't have a dog. So she did need to get a dog. Jovi was kind of upset, thinking, well, I want to have another child. Why would you get a dog right now? I really would rather your focus be on a child rather than a dog. But Yara's just not ready for another baby. And I know that Jovi keeps pushing for it, but she's made it very clear. Her being alone most of the time is going to be very difficult for her to raise a child by herself on top of taking care of Myla. So was a dog maybe the right move? Who knows? But regardless, it was the right move for her business, and that's what she's focusing on, and props to her. So dog is super cute. Jovi's like, whatever with the baby. They start driving home, and of course, Jovi's letting her know, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, I'm not taking it out to go to the bathroom. Okay, what a supportive husband. Like, what? No, like, you guys, this is your dog together. Mila's going to be so happy to have this dog. Of course you should be helping Yara with the dog's restroom, potty breaks, feeding it, caring for it. I mean, that's just kind of ridiculous, but Jovi's just, he's kind of selfish sometimes. I think she's called him selfish, so whatever. That's where he stands on that. Later on, we see that Yara wants to get some photos for her new brand, right? So she wants to take some pictures, some professional photos, do it for social media, and she has asked Lauren to be her photographer, which I thought, okay, that's cute. Good idea, right? So Lauren somehow leaves her house with all these children, and she comes to be a photographer for Yara. She's taking all these pictures, and she's gassing her up, and she's being a good photographer. Like, you look great. Okay, turn your hair this way. Move that way. Wonderful. Like, let's keep it going. Then she shows Yara these photos, and Yara was so brutally honest, which is very Eastern European of her. She's like, oh, these are ugly. This is horrible. You cut off my leg. You cut off my head here. What are you doing? And I thought, wow, that is kind of mean. She's doing her best, obviously. And they might not look that great, but she really was trying to do her a favor. And Lauren gets mad. Lauren's like, hey, I'm doing this for free. I'm not a professional photographer. And if you needed a professional photographer, you should have thought about hiring one. So she kind of snapped right back at her. So that was pretty funny. I didn't think it was very fair of Yara to be so critical. But I mean, we end up seeing some of these pictures and they were pretty bad. Like, they were pretty bad. But not everybody understands, like, people's angles, right? So Lauren did what she thought was a good job, but not so much. So they kind of wrap up the photo shoot. It is what it is. And Lauren starts kind of venting and opening up about her issues that she's having with Alex and some struggles. And she says, he's going to kill me for this, but he has essentially been asking her to be a bit more feminine. So that was kind of weird to me. And I didn't understand that because I actually think Lauren is beautiful and she dresses so cute. And I love her style. She usually has, like, really cute outfits on usually. And she's so pretty. And so I didn't understand what he possibly could have meant by that. But she started venting and saying, hey, look, I'm a stay-at-home mom. She works. She has three kids. And she's struggling. And it's really hard to get everything done. And I can't even imagine having three kids working and just being solely responsible for all the chores. That's like five full-time jobs right there. And so it was kind of sad and disheartening to hear that Alex has been so hard on her, but Yara's takeaway clip was, they seem like the perfect couple. You think that they have everything together, and then all you have to do is peel back the onion just a little bit and you see some, like, major red flags, major issues. And she almost took a little bit of pleasure in seeing that they're struggling, which I guess I understand that maybe she felt like it's more relatable, but I also thought, hey, that's kind of messed up to take any kind of joy in her pain right now. She's opening up, she's being vulnerable, and she's saying she's struggling. I just thought it was kind of shady. Not a great friend would, I guess, say or think those things, but they're not really great friends, so that kind of would explain it. And she was pretty shady about it, but regardless, that's kind of just what they're going through. So I guess we're going to see throughout the season, maybe Lauren kind of focus on those struggles and open up about that. We do see on some of the teasers when Lauren gets into it with Libby that stuff kind of gets exposed. So it'll be pretty interesting to see how that happens. Didn't really take Alex for that kind of a husband, but apparently he is. Next we have Jasmine and Gino. Again, I'm sorry I say it every episode, but their storyline is so boring. It's so boring. So Gino's meeting with his family members. He sees Dana and Dana's wife, and they start talking about everything that's been going on. And essentially Dana's wife is saying, hey, you know, Jasmine really loves you. She really wants to make it work. You should give it a last shot. I mean, this is your marriage we're talking about. So Gino kind of cracks a little bit. He fumbles and he's like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe there is something to salvage. So he meets with Jasmine as a last ditch effort. They meet at a bar and Jasmine's there early. She's waiting for him. It kind of makes it seem like he's not going to show up, but he does. He shows up And so as he gets there, they have this like little banter, and you kind of see them have this, I guess, a connection, or I guess some kind of chemistry, more so than him and Natalie, gross. But so you see them have more of a connection, and they're talking, and Jasmine's kind of wanting to see if he's going to want to salvage the marriage. And Gino starts talking about how he's been seeing Natalie and his frustration with the fact that Jasmine's living with Matt. And Jasmine was being very, not, I don't want to give her any credit, but really, she was being very careful with what she said. He was asking her personal details. She didn't want to share it with Gino because she didn't want to hurt his feelings. And so she was holding back quite a bit. And then Gino was just laying it in about how great Natalie is, how much he's enjoying spending time with her. And Jasmine is like, that is so mean. You are ruthless. You're a savage. I don't know if it really hurt her because I think the whole thing's just kind of a sham. Like, are they really married? I wonder if anyone on Reddit has found out if some of these couples that seem like they're not really married, are they married? Like, is there really a marriage certificate? I would love to see that. I think I might look on Reddit and see if anyone's found that. But regardless, it's hard to imagine that Jasmine's genuinely hurt, but she has a good point that those things that he's doing would be hurtful if they're married and they're trying to salvage their marriage. But the whole thing blows up. Gino gets upset. She calls him a hypocrite. Says that he tried to essentially crucify her for what she did, but he's doing the same thing, but he's rubbing it in her face. So, I mean, is he a hypocrite? Yeah, he is, but I mean, is the marriage real? I don't. So, that was the end of episode 5. I thought it was a good episode. We have a lot to see coming up in episode 6. They're going to follow up more on Kara and Guillermo, which I think is a really interesting storyline. It seems more authentic and more real, but nonetheless, it was a good episode. I was pretty entertained. Yara's kind of shady, but it's okay. I guess they're all shady, right? None of them are that kind or whatever. So, thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next on episode 6. Ciao.